You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and insightful daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and refined product markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the U.S. energy landscape.
Friday, March 27th, 2026. Ricky, don't lose that number. 311 Gas Transportation. What is it, why is it, and how does it work? Published by Rick Smead. The natural gas industry and its regulatory structures can get confusing sometimes, especially as they interact with a very active and transparent market. One regulatory topic that's been around for a long time but has suddenly become enormously important is 311 transportation. This relates to the transportation of gas by an intrastate pipeline that is not regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission but delivers into interstate commerce. As we discuss in today's RBN blog, 311 transportation is in the spotlight because it applies to the slew of new pipelines that have been built across Texas to get Permian gas to market. First, a little background. 311 refers to Section 311 of the Natural Gas Policy Act of 1978, aka the NGPA. Yes, it goes back that far. A half century ago, the U.S. interstate natural gas market was out of gas. The wellhead price of gas destined for the interstate market had been regulated at very low levels ever since 1954. Low prices had two consequences. Natural gas was very in demand, especially after the Clean Air Act became law in 1970 and pretty much required anyone with a big boiler to cut their pollution, with gas being the cheapest way to do so. The producers who brought natural gas to market were deeply uninterested in selling at low prices, especially when gas that did not get into interstate markets, that stayed in the state where it was produced, could be sold at whatever the market would bear. The difference for producers was selling at 52 cents per thousand cubic feet interstate or $2.50 per thousand cubic feet in the intrastate market. As a result, the interstate gas market suffered extreme, sometimes catastrophic shortages throughout the 1970s. This came to a head in 1977, when newly inaugurated President Jimmy Carter got the Emergency Natural Gas Act, or the ENGA, passed to fix as much as it could in short-term emergencies. One of the problems that was pointed out and addressed in that act was the ability of gas in intrastate markets to get out of their states into interstate markets. This problem existed because, back then, if an intrastate pipeline even touched gas destined for interstate markets, it suddenly became a federally regulated interstate pipeline and had to redo everything, that is, become fully regulated by FERC, actually, FERC's predecessor, the Federal Power Commission, under the Natural Gas Act of 1938, or NGA. This meant that during the natural gas shortages of the 1970s, gas in Texas intrastate pipelines could not leave the state, despite the rest of the country starving for supply. ENGA provided for intrastate pipelines to feed interstates in an emergency without becoming FERC-regulated. Then, the next year in the NGPA, Congress made that permanent, creating a way to free up access from the intrastate market to the interstate market, to help keep people from freezing in New York. The new rules were written into Section 311 of the NGPA. It allowed intrastates to transport to an interstate pipeline without getting to experience the joys of federal regulation under the NGA. Because all this was happening under a different law than the NGA, 311 service got its own set of rules at FERC. The intrastate pipelines could continue to offer intrastate service. For example, a Texas pipeline could use its Texas Railroad Commission tariff to move the gas that remained in-state, and would use a statement of operating conditions providing rates and terms and conditions of service on file with FERC to transport gas delivered to interstate pipelines. The 311 transportation rates didn't have to be just and reasonable. The standard required for interstate rates, they had to be fair and equitable. Admittedly, it would be hard for anyone but a FERC expert to tell the difference. In any event, there were two ways an intrastate pipeline could set its rates for 311 service into the interstate market. If it had state-approved rates, as in Texas, it could propose to FERC that it use those, and FERC would presume the rates were fair and equitable when they took effect. If the rate was challenged, i.e., the presumption was rebutted, FERC could step up and review the work of its state regulator counterparts. If there were no state-approved rates, as in Louisiana, the pipeline would have to make a cost-based showing to support its proposed rates, similar to what an interstate pipeline has to do in a rate case. Once approved by FERC, these rates would be deemed fair and equitable. Remember, all this was going on against a backdrop of freeing up the intrastate network to help out the interstate market, Blue Lines. So, 311 service was a useful but somewhat secondary thing going on in the gas market, not changing much even as the market as a whole changed profoundly through restructuring and the shale revolution. Then came the Permian, the boom in associated gas production there, and the rapid expansion of the LNG export market. Suddenly, By far the largest concentration of new pipeline construction in the North American natural gas industry was taking place across Texas, with destinations ranging from the LNG export market to rapidly growing power markets across the Gulf Coast. These pipelines were virtually all intrastate within Texas, in large part because of the sheer volume of Texas-based gas supply and the vibrancy of intrastate delivery markets on the Texas Gulf Coast. It helps too that an intrastate pipeline can be built in a small fraction of the time it takes to get approval for and build an interstate pipeline. So, we saw pipeline behemoths with capacities of 2 BCF per day or more sprouting like wildflowers in the spring. However, because of the post-NGPA connectivity between interstate and intrastate pipelines, all these pipelines depend on NGPA Section 311, with its FERC overlay, for their commercial success. So, a previously sleepy area of FERC regulation became an important linchpin for greenfield pipeline construction. One of the benefits that came from 311 policy over the years was that if an intrastate pipeline was able to use its state-approved rates for 311 service, its transportation of intrastate gas and its transportation of 311 gas would carry the same transportation costs, and thus leave shippers indifferent as to which color the transportation was. This can be important to potential shippers making choices as to where they want their gas to go, in line with the NGPA's goals of making gas suppliers indifferent to their ultimate destination markets. So, the presumption that the rates wouldn't change if some of the gas flowed into an interstate pipeline versus an intrastate one brought a lot of peace to the valley. NGPA rates weathered relative stability when FERC reorganized the interstate natural gas market in Order 636, especially with its rules around rate design. Whereas firm rates in intrastate markets took a lot of forms, with many being a simple fixed fee covering all costs, regardless of throughput, FERC required all interstate pipelines to use straight fixed variable rate design, or SFV. In the FERC SFV rate design, all the fixed costs are recovered through a fixed reservation charge, similar to the intrastate fixed rates. However, variable costs, primarily compression and meter operating costs, are required to be recovered in a usage charge, or fee for the gas that actually flows. After Order 636 went into effect, from 1995 to 1997, some court and FERC activity led to a ruling suggesting that intrastate pipelines offering interstate service, such as 311 pipelines and so-called Hinshaw pipelines, had to mirror interstate pipeline SFE rate design when they were transporting in interstate commerce, to level the playing field with interstate pipelines, even if they were electing to use their state-approved intrastate rates on the notion that interstates did not have the same rate freedom. A Hinshaw pipeline takes gas from an interstate pipeline, but all of that gas is consumed within the state where it was taken. Such pipelines are typically owned by local distribution companies. This case law predated later changes in FERC policy permitting interstates more rate flexibility, including negotiated rates that do not need to conform to the SFE rate design, a policy that FERC never extended to 311 service. Even though FERC continued to presume intrastate rates without SFE rate designs were fair and equitable through the 2000s, these 30-year-old decisions are emerging as a sort of a dormant landmine for the numerous new pipelines that are making Permian abundance work today. Recently, FERC has begun imposing its preferences that all 311 service be at SFV rates as it approves and accepts the initiation of 311 service for new pipelines across the country, including cross-Texas Permian pipelines, even if they do not compete with similarly routed interstate pipelines. Aside from competitive considerations, FERC bases its decisions upon the variable cost-based usage charges role as the minimum rate for discounted service. The legal opinion is that if there is not a minimum rate that reflects variable costs, the pipeline may be found to be engaged in predatory pricing, i.e., selling below cost. However, that particular issue could certainly be resolved by just addressing the minimum rate without messing with the rate design for the service itself. The FERC decisions stand to bring about a lot of turmoil in the Texas market, in that many contracts involve both intrastate service and 311 service, leading to very complicated dynamics for shippers if the two services are priced differently. One case has already been appealed to the Fifth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals, so it will be very interesting to see how the whole thing comes out. Needless to say, complications in the economics and administration of the vast transportation networks from the Permian can pose a lot of unforeseen practical problems in the forward progress of the U.S. LNG export market's growth. And as always, markets hate uncertainty, so knowing the final answer as soon as possible would be helpful. Ricky Don't Lose That Number was written by Walter Becker and Donald Fagan and appears as the first song on side one of Steely Dan's third studio album, Pretzel Logic. The song's lyrics refer to Ricky Dukinet, a student at Bard College, where Donald Fagan met and became attracted to her. The intro to the song was lifted from the intro to jazz artist Horace Silver's song For My Father. The Latin-flavored tune with a sing-along chorus was released as the first single from the album in April 1974, and went to number 4 on the Billboard Hot 100 singles chart. Personnel on the record were Donald Fagen, lead, backing vocals, Walter Becker, bass, backing vocals, Michael Omardian, piano, Jeff Baxter, electric guitar, Dean Parks, acoustic guitar, Jim Gordon, drums, Victor Feldman, percussion, Flopamba, and Timothy B. Schmidt, backing vocals. PressoLogic was recorded between October 1973 and January 1974 at Village Recorder and Cherokee Studios in Los Angeles with Gary Katz producing. Released in February 1974, it went to number 8 on the Billboard 200 albums chart and has been certified platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America. Two singles were released from the LP. Steely Dan is an American rock band formed in Annandale on Hudson, New York, in 1971 by Walter Becker and Donald Fagen. The duo moved to Los Angeles, and by 1974 they chose to stop performing live and use studio musicians on future Steely Dan releases. They have released 9 studio albums, 2 live albums, 12 compilation albums and 22 singles and have sold over 40 million records worldwide. They have won 3 Grammy Awards and are members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Songwriters Hall of Fame. The duo took a hiatus from 1981 to 1995, then did a few reunion tours and released 2 more studio albums in 2000 and 2003. Both Becker and Fagen achieved successful solo careers. Walter Becker died in New York City in September 2017 at 67. Donald Fagen continues to record and perform as a solo artist and under the moniker of Steely Dan.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.